Good afternoon. I offer words from the late Unitarian Universalist minister David Eaton. All living substance, all substance of energy, being, and purpose are united and share the same destiny. All people, those we love and those we know not of, are united and share the same destiny. Birth to death. We share this unity with the sun, earth, our brothers and sisters, strangers, flowers of the field, snowflakes, volcanoes, and moonbeams. Birth, life, and death. Unknown, known, unknown. Our destiny from unknown to unknown. So may we have the faith to accept this mystery and build upon its everlasting truth. Sam's daughter, Susan, is going to light the chalice for us, our Unitarian Universalist symbol of love and wisdom. So we come today in memory and celebration of the life and legacy of Sam Lacy, one known to each of us in a different way, but all fondly held. We recognize that Sam has moved from the known to the unknown, and in that we remember our own mortality as well as that of those who we love. We come today to commit to the preciousness of memory, a life mingled with our own. Those whom we love do indeed leave us, and when we lose them, there's nothing that lessens our grief, but what they were can never leave us. The strength of their presence, the warmth of their love, these are ours always, interfused with our thoughts and blended with our lives. So we come to mourn Sam's death, yes, but we recognize that his was a death that came at the end of a long, rich life, a full life, which we'll hear more about in a moment. Death is not annihilation, and Sam's death coming as it did after such a productive life is not startling or outside the natural cycles of life and death, which a gardener like Sam would well know. Nevertheless, we come to laugh and cry, to give comfort and sustenance to one another, and to consider what we learned from Sam's life. Mostly, though, we're grateful. We're grateful for the life he lived and that we were part of that in some way. Sam's gone from us, but who he was will never leave us. We treasure his curiosity, his sharp intellect, his commitment and passion for peace and justice. As the minister of this congregation, I welcome you all here. I especially welcome the family with whom we share solidarity and sympathy today. We're glad to have them with us, recognizing that not all of them are here in body, but that they are all here in spirit. And we honor Sam's life by remembering them and by remembering him. And Mike is going to come up and tell us something of Sam's life.
Thanks to all of you for coming out today. I'm trying the new scheme of putting your notes on your phone, so we're going to see how this works. Well, last weekend, as it happened, I was at a memorial service for an older colleague and friend of mine, and his daughter kicked things off with a very similar speech, so I'm thinking, okay, good, I have a great example here. Unfortunately, she's a professor of creative writing, and after I heard her talk, I said, I'm not trying to do anything fancy up here, which is fitting, because as those of you who knew my father, you know, he hated, or had no taste for anyway, any kind of fanfare and the like. So this is a no-fanfare talk, just a few touchstones of his life, some of which some of you may already know. So by way of introduction, you all knew him as Sam, of course, but some of you who knew him better might know he had this peculiar first name of Burritt, B-U-R-R-I-T-T, and where the heck did that come from? Well, it was named after his father, who was named after a tragically deceased, what would have been great uncle or of my father's. But my father never knew where that name came from until he was about, I think, sometime in his early 80s, where he found out, he thinks, not for sure, that he was named after mid-19th century Christian pacifist and abolitionist named Elihu Burritt, who is, I think, no longer well-known or famous beyond that period. But this was sort of complete accident, other than I think my father's grandfather was a fundamentalist Christian back when fundamentalists were on the left. Well, there was that time. So my father didn't know this, any part of this, his whole life, and I'm quite sure that his parents didn't name him that with any intention, but it turned out, like I guess many things, to be accidentally on target given some of my father's later interests. Anyway, on to the early life. My father was born in 1919, West Virginia. I've used that to advantage one time or another when I encounter someone from the area to look like I'm a regular person rather than a pointy-headed person. But his family moved. His father was a chemist for DuPont. His mother was what I guess we'd now call a socialite and an artist. They moved to Red Bank, New Jersey, lived along the water there, where I think my father acquired a lot of his interest for boating, fishing, and the like. They moved later to Niagara Falls, where I think my father learned his horror of environmental pollution, because my grandfather, being a chemist, knew that the chlorine that they manufactured around there, if the plant ever blew up, bad things were going to happen. So they kept photodeveloper around the house to use on a rag in case the chlorine ever went off. So I guess that had a lasting influence. Anyway, my father had a couple of older brothers, one of whom died, an older sister, younger brother, younger sister. Most notable thing about his early life was my father, for whatever reasons, whether it was passion or ability or whatever, was always a very successful school student, graduated from high school at 15 or 16, spent a year or so in Switzerland and Europe with some family, friends, and other things. I think had a nice part of his life there, he thought. Anyway, he came back, before I should mention that, before going ahead of that, one notable thing about what my father counted as home was, for him, home was really always, I think, as a child anyway, was his family's place in the Adirondacks near Lake Placid, which his family had acquired around 1920 when all that land had been logged over and was available for a song and later, of course, became beautiful again. But he spent his childhood summers there with, hiking, fishing, wandering around the woods, learning from handymen, appreciating plants, and again, something I think had a lifelong influence on him. He entered college then in 1937 at Harvard, and by his own account was an indifferent student, he claimed, this was back before all of Lake Wobegon's children were above average, so a C student may have been something different back then. But it was good enough to get him into medical school. He always felt surprised by that. At Cornell, he was entered medical school during the war years and, of course, was deferred as a medical physician in training. Went into the military right after college or after medical school. The Army gave him a little medical training. Fortunately, VJ Day happened early on in his Army career. So he ended up being assigned to a hospital ship in the South Pacific about 1946, going around the South Pacific, Philippines, Korea, Corregidor, Japan, Hawaii. And notably, he met my mother there, who was a dietitian on this peculiar thing. I've always been able to say, if ever asked, can you name an odd thing about yourself? I said, my parents met in the Army on a ship, which I thought was kind of an ironic note. My father's descriptions of it make a little bit sound like a little bit like the television show MASH, in the sense of a bunch of physician officers in rebellion against a regular army commander on the ship. But notably there, I think he really liked the people there. He always said that this is where he learned to kind of enjoy life with regular people. I recall him saying that one of his friends on the ship, I think a fellow physician, was a Communist Party member, or had been, and that influenced my father a bit. Then notably, my dad, again on the lighter side here, he remarked several times that he had a bet with one of his friends on ship that human beings would never land on the moon during his lifetime. It was a $1 million bet. And fortunately, my dad was unfortunately was on the wrong side of that one, but nobody tracked him down in whatever it was 1969. You know, might say, "Oh, good, you know, I bet with another physician, I bet I can get some money out of him." Coming out of the military on the West Coast, somehow or another, again, my dad, every professional success like that, he claimed he doesn't know how it happened to him, but he was accepted to the Menninger Foundation residency program and started in 1946. So he and my mother moved to Topeka in 1946. He was in school there for 2 or 3 years. Susan and I were born around then. My father ended up working then at Topeka State Hospital until about 1958. I think that was probably not an especially exciting place to work, tough place to work. But I know he always enjoyed all of his friends. They're very diverse and interesting, a group of people that he worked with there and at Menninger's. Anyway, came to Manhattan in 58 to be the initial psychiatrist at the then Riley County Guidance Center, worked there till early mid-60s, started transitioning into some private practice and part-time at CSU, and then worked into being full-time at CSU I've been there too long, I'm retiring. KSU, there's actually a fair amount of exchange of personnel at KSU starting from mid-60s up until he retired at close to age 80. I can't remember the exact date now. But again, I know they always greatly appreciated the people that he worked with there, not the bosses so much. He never liked bosses too much. In mid-1960s, he got divorced and remarried to Yvonne, and through which Susan and I acquired several brothers and sisters out of that lot. We'll speak later today. Notably, my dad, I think one of the great successes of his life, if you'd asked him, was to have been able to live in the same house with 2/3 of an acre and all sorts of mature landscape, as we'd say, all sorts of opportunities for gardening. Is, you know, my dad's notion of gardening was to plant as many different possible species of everything, whether or not it could possibly grow in eastern Kansas. I'm not surprised. I'm surprised there weren't some palm trees attempted there. The worst, blueberries got attempted, not very successfully. Anyway, so as you know, that was one of his many long-time hobbies. I was kind of counting up a number of things, and probably many of you, well, on the plant side, one of the things I was thinking is, I wonder if everybody in this room at one time or another has had a plant from my father given to them or perhaps forced upon them, or many plants in some case. I took up that bad habit myself. He had a lot of different recreational hobbies, many active things. One time his life had liked to ski, acquired a pilot's license. Here's one of the funny things. In the war, you could get flying lessons for free, so he liked free things, signed up for that, and gave it up because he always thought this is too dangerous to do if you have a family. And then as I was going through my dad's materials or what after he died, I found his flight logbook, early entries from the early 1940s. Last entry, something like 1987, he decided he would take it up again with his friend Abe Miller, who flew. Anyway, I thought that was a fun one. But anyway, gardening would be among his many, many interests, reading, fiction, nonfiction. I know I was thinking the other day that Silent Spring was something that great influence on him. Sailing, all sorts of boating he owned. I think over my lifetime, I can remember owning 4 or 5 boats, usually in shares with other people. He had no fetish for having to own something outright himself. He'd rather share the labor, I guess. Fishing, took up baking of a variety of kinds in the 70s or so, bread, cookies, pies. Photography, do-it-yourself activities. Repair. Now here's, again, those of you who know my father will appreciate this one. He was a frugal person, and which led him to like to repair things. Unfortunately, he was too cheap to buy any tools to speak of. So, which I didn't realize what a barrier this was till I was older myself, and I went the other direction. I think he liked learning things his whole life. And had a very diverse group of friends, and those kind of fit together there. Because one of the things I noticed about my daddy's whole life, I think, is that one of the things he appreciated about his friends was that they were an opportunity to learn things. Or ask things. If he wanted to figure out or solve some problem, he'd go ask one of his friends, many of whom had diverse talents in diverse places. He was sort of a collector of wisdom from his friends. Anyway, that's the basic sketch there, and I will leave it for people who have more flowery things to say than I would. Thanks a lot, and thanks for coming.
So a eulogy is defined as a laudatory speech about someone. We speak well of our dead because we miss them, and we need to appreciate the connections we had. Now, I'd known Sam only a couple of years, and I'm not altogether sure he even wanted a minister to know him, but I'm grateful to Sylvia Beeman and Christopher Renner for making the connections possible, for smoothing that through. Sam helped countless people with his practice of psychiatry. One man posted in our fellowship Facebook group that Sam saved his life. And I'm sure he was not the only one who felt that way. Sam's practice brought wholeness and health to many people over the years. Now, we may never know exactly what brought Sam to the practice of psychiatry, but I've heard speculation that it may have been trying to understand himself. Sam was truly a unique individual, independent and self-reliant and strongly committed to his decisions. Okay, I've heard him called stubborn. Stubborn, though, is only another word for determined, resolute, and persistent. Sam knew his mind, and once he made a decision, was not easily dissuaded. And what a mind. Sam's intellect outlasted his body. He read voraciously, a lot of nonfiction stuff, absorbed facts and theories, and enjoyed discussing them with others. And at the same time, a granddaughter appreciated him for teaching her not to believe everything she read. His interests were wide. Besides his medical journals, anything about the environment, scientific breakthroughs, liberal political thought. Throughout his life, he was fascinated, as Mike told us, with many different things, with doing a lot of different things, sailing and flying and gardening and baking and birds. A jack of all trades, even if a master of none of those particular. But he was very eclectic in his interests, a Renaissance man. And because of that breadth of interests, I've run into so many people who connected with him in one way or another. Sam's commitment to social justice was lived out through his involvement with the Manhattan Alliance for Peace and Justice, where he served on the board and kept at the work as long as he could, even if that meant labeling and mailing. Now, I've been told that Sam liked the poet Tennyson, so I close this eulogy with a piece of Tennyson's poem Ulysses, in a sentiment that Sam might share with Ulysses. I cannot rest from travel. I will drink life to the lees. All times I have enjoyed greatly, have suffered greatly, both with those that loved me and alone on shore, and when through scudding drifts the rainy Hyades vexed the dim sea, I am become a name, for always roaming with a hungry heart, much have I seen and known. Myself not least, but honored of them all, and drunk delight of battle with my peers far on the ringing plains of winding Troy, I am a part of all that I have met. Yet all experience is an arch wherethrough gleams that untraveled world whose margin fades forever and forever when I move. How dull it is to pause, to make an end, to rust unburnished, not to shine in use, as though to breathe were life. Life piled on life were all too little, and of one to me little remains. But every hour is saved from that eternal silence, something more, a bringer of new things. And vile it were for some three suns to store and hoard myself, and this gray spirit yearning in desire to follow knowledge like a sinking star beyond the utmost bound of human thought. Follow knowledge like a sinking star beyond the utmost bound of human thought. I invite you to your own memories of Sam, which you will be invited to share if you wish, following the musical reflection. Remember his look, his touch. Remember how you came to know him and what he leaves behind for you now. Remember and treasure.
Thank you. was just told if I come up, the music will fade. But it seemed like a good time. I'm Paul Lacey, one of the kids that he mentioned in his speech. Unfortunately, Mike and I did not talk about what we were going to talk about, so he said everything I was going to say. So I will try to come up with some new things when I come up here. I'm going to preface what I'm going to say with a disclaimer. Everything I say about Dad is based upon my own experiences, and clouded by time and how I viewed the world at that time. Some of you may recall things about Dad differently, making them no less valid. I'm here to share some of my thoughts and memories of Dad that will hopefully kindle memories of your own as you listen to what I say. When my sister and I first discussed about having a memorial here, I said, I don't want to say anything because this is not the kind of thing Dad cares about. You know, he wouldn't mind people getting together and, you know, sitting around and having a cracker and maybe talking about him. But to get up here and like this, he'd be in the corner going, I don't want this to happen. But it's happening, Dad. So what can you say? I wasn't going to say anything, but I was sitting there one night trying to go to sleep, and just memories just started kind of crushing in on me. I just kept things just saying, hey, God, it would be neat to say this about Dad. This would be neat to say about Dad. So I called Susan up later after I'd already said, no, I don't want to say anything. I said, Susan, I think I want to say something. She said, sure, say something. So that's why I'm up here. First of all, I want to say Dad was a brilliant guy. Dad was clueless. Dad could be compassionate, and Dad could say the things that just make you sit there and scratch your head. So what the hell does he mean by that? All of these are true, and I think everyone who knew Dad would say the same thing. Another reason, by the way, I'm up here is because I remember, well, I think the last time I was here was for another close friend of his memorial, and their family is here today, and they did such a wonderful job. I thought, talking about their dad, I said, I can't be outdone. There's a competitive nature here, but I still will be outdone because I thought they did such a magnificent job at that memorial. I was going to say some things about his history a little bit, but I think Mike did a really good job. So I'm going to start with a history where Dad had moved to Manhattan already, if you all recall. And his oldest daughter, my sister, was starting to college. My oldest brother, Mike, was about to start college. And here Dad has some freedom for once to go, okay, life is good. And he drags my mom and three of us from Denver and starts brand new with three kids. And I said, that's really something to do that because, you know, when you've already had two kids and you bring in three more, that was a big deal. During the time I've known Dad, I would never say he's been complacent. I think we've sort of seen that in some of the things that we have been said along here. Along with all the social issues, he continued to work his jobs that he did at his private practice and at Kansas State. We've talked about his other interests, and I know I'm going to repeat some stuff, but it's just amazing all the things that this man has done. We talked about sailing. He skied. He fished. He played tennis. He was an avid reader. He was a bridge player, loved bridge. He bowled. He golfed. He birdwatched. He liked astronomy. He's an active member, of course, in this fellowship. And this was back when the fellowship was a little teeny house where they had six chairs, and that was filling the place up. I remember it because as Quentin, and since he and I grew up together back then, this was a little teeny house we'd run around in the backyard because we were bored being inside. It was that small a house. It didn't take long to run around it to get back in and cause trouble again. One of the things that Mike mentioned about sailing, I took up board sailing when I was thought fairly old in my 30s, and for some reason Dad took this as an endorsement for him to start doing it himself in his 60s. I don't know what you all know about board sailing, but it's a board that you stand on with a sail that you pick up out of the water, and then you stand on the board and it sails, kind of like you would a surfboard. He's taking this up in his 60s, and he said, well, this is something we can talk about on a weekly basis. Mainly what he did is he talked about how he would fall in the water, get back up, pull the sail up, and then fall in the water on the other side. But it was amazing. We could talk about an hour doing that because I did a lot of falling too. I just was glad that I wasn't the only one doing it. The problem was that he out-yeared me by so much. He was supposed to fall. I wasn't. He did not limit his adventures to Manhattan. I don't know if... anyone realize this, he took a lot of trips, not just within the country, but he also went to Russia and China. And using his powers of getting that in front of people and speaking, what his main thoughts about Russia was, there were just too many people controlling what we did. That was his whole spiel. I said, how was Russia? Too many people telling me what I could or could not do. That was it. Went to China, he complained about the toilets. I said, well, how was China? The toilets were really bad. Anything else you want to share with me on that, Dad? That's pretty much it. So it wasn't much, but I'm sure he had a great experience, otherwise he wouldn't have done this. He went on hikes and stuff like that when he was as old as I am or older. He was quite adventurous. He also took a lot of sailing trips with his brother, who at that time had a sailboat charter. And so Dad would go down there, and since it was free, since it was brother, and I think we've mentioned this a few times, Dad did not like to spend a lot of money. So he would go down and charter the boat with his brother, and his main thing was, I had to keep my feet clean because my sister-in-law would get mad at me. So again, this was his view of his trip. I'm sure he had a great time, but that's what he told me. And as I think Susan and Mike would probably agree, that was how Dad would explain some of his wonderful experiences. What I'm trying to get at, it was not always easy for Dad to express his love. But he did it in ways that made a difference. He made every effort to attend events of us kids and his grandchildren. He was a man of few words. I remember one time my youngest son, Ross, was doing a saxophone thing at one of these, at the school he was at. And let's say that the competition was not real tough. It was not a competition. They just went out and showed some talent they had. And there was not a lot of talent that night. But I thought he did a really good job on the saxophone. And Dad looked over me and said, Ross was the best there was tonight. And I realized there wasn't a lot of competition, but he did great. And you could see he was just proud as punch of what happened. And he went to my older son's basketball games, even though these were long trips and he had to come and watch. He was very proud of his kids. And of course, I'm talking about what I saw, and I know he did it with other members of the family as well, with Susan's kids as well, and my other sisters as well. He made a real effort to make sure that they understood that he cared. He wasn't the one who'd go up and hug and say, I love you to death, but he was the one who'd say, it was really nice to see you play the saxophone or whatever, and that I had the opportunity to see it. One of the things that really stood out to me one time is I used to do triathlons, and I did them for myself, and I didn't care whether people saw them or not. And I don't know how Dad found out about it one time. I was doing a triathlon in Topeka, Kansas, and I was on the bike portion, and I'm coming around the corner, and there's this soul man standing there, and he's just sitting there going. And I'm going, Dad? And after the race, I called him and said, Dad, was that you? Yeah, I just wanted to come out and watch you. I said, you could have met me at the end. He said, no, I just wanted to see you in the race. That's the way he told me he loved me. And it was obviously it meant a lot to me to see somebody I did not expect on this corner by himself waving at me. As he got older, Dad decided, as we've decided, he's pretty determined. He still decided he needed to climb ladders, trim trees, drive a car that continued to run against all laws of nature. Being a liberal, the car was held together by all the stickers he placed on the bumper. Seats were falling apart, were dealt with throwing old rugs and blankets over the holes. Doors were held together by the strategic placement of wire hangers and seat belts. I am not kidding. He had a door that you couldn't open because it was held together by a seat belt that was tied with a seat belt. When Mike and I tried to move that car, we opened up the front, and it was nothing but pack rats. It just filled the entire engine with nothing but debris. That was Dad's car. He continued to drive it and threaten everybody in Manhattan every time he got in a car. As they got older, Mom said, we need to get out of here. I'm getting too old to go up and down the stairs, and I want to go to Boulder. And Dad said, I want to be in Manhattan. So she moved to Boulder, and he stayed in Manhattan. Dad wanted to be in the house that was his, that he loved. He continued to make his own food. He sustained himself quite well. While I was there one time, he was in his late 80s, maybe early 90s. He was still building a pond in the back for fish. He just did not give up. That was just the way Dad was. Dad, you're in your 90s. You don't need a build a thing for fish. Well, maybe I don't, but we need to go get the fish today. So we went out to get the fish. I don't think the fish lasted very long, but it worked for him. Unfortunately for folks that live as long as Dad does, you have to endure the passing of many of your friends. And unfortunately, he did. He outlived most of his closest friends. He replaced them with many more. I would not dare to say some of those who provided companionship and aid to Dad during his final years, because I see a lot of them in here today. If I would fail to mention one of their names, I would feel really remiss. I can't do that. But I can say that those people that were there for him at the end, they know who they were, and I appreciated that the times I visited and I saw what they did for him and how they were there for him near the end. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being there and helping out Dad. It meant a lot to him, and meant a lot to us. Now, my brother-in-law, Jim, is going to have a microphone, and he's going to allow some of you, if you want to say something, he's going to carry that microphone to you, and if you could wait until he gets there, and if you want to say something, you can, and I'm going to let him do his thing.
Hi, I've got several memories of Sam. Certainly, I accepted plants that were forced on me, but I also got to eat sourdough bread and take home starter. The things I most value about my association with Sam were that he, with the comments he made at the fellowship, inspired me to go out and ring the bell for the Salvation Army at Walmart. And those are some of the most rewarding hours of my life. Then the other thing was, here was this guy who was a generation older than me passing out leaflets on tax day at the post office. Well, hell, if he can do it, I can too. And so thank you, Sam.
My family has known the Lacys for really as long as I can remember. In fact, I don't remember a time that I did not know the Lacy family. Started out with Susan and Mike, and they're a few years older than I am, so I didn't really hang much with the Lacys. But then when Yvonne and Jane and Paul and Ann came into the picture, that's when I got closer to the Lacys. I was the first person that Paul met when he came to Manhattan, and we had some great times together. Those of you who know me, you know that Brock and Betty Dale are my parents, and the Lacys and the Dales were the best friends. And when my mom passed, Sam and Yvonne pretty much adopted Brock, and Paul looks at my dad as being his uncle. Paul's kids look at him as being their uncle. Sam and Brock always struck me as the odd couple. Sam, the fastidious Felix. Brock, the kind of sloppy slob Oscar. A very unique pair of guys who loved each other dearly and did everything for each other. So, Sam, thank you for taking care of my dad in his final years.
I actually like to write essays, but I very seldom finish them. And I started this one about Sam the last time after I saw him. If I can make it work. And I'm too clunky. I couldn't find, I didn't quite have time to print this off, so it's like I dragged my computer here. So the last time I saw Sam was right after he had a bad fall. I think it was like 3 years ago, and he'd broken a couple of ribs. He had some terrible bruising on his back. And so this is actually pretty much just what you said. It must have been quite a sight when Brock and Sam, in their mid-80s, scrambled into the bed of some guy's pickup truck on their way to the winter Audubon bird count. My father in his lined and rumpled trench coat and Sam in an ancient L.L. Bean camper's jacket were surprisingly lithe old geezers. I imagine my father was clinging to his funky homemade radar designed to pick up and amplify bird song. He and Sam were hard of hearing by then, though Sam more profoundly so. My father also suffered from macular degeneration, so they had worked out some kind of codependent dance where Sam would call out, "Bird," and point in the direction of something winged. And then, like my favorite Martian, the antennae on Dad's contraption would go up to catch the call. "Ah, that's a dark-eyed junco." They were like an intellectual but more staid version of Laurel and Hardy, or perhaps Cheech and Chong. In fact, in the late 60s, they once conducted an experiment, in the name of science, of course, with catnip. So the results, no euphoria, definite scratchy throat. In fact, our families were entwined for decades. Oopsie. Our families were entwined for decades. My parents met Sam shortly before I was born when he became part of a well-read renegade group that had decided Manhattan, Kansas needed a Unitarian Universalist house of worship. Then, when I was in fourth grade, Sam remarried. His two children and Yvonne's three blended nicely with our family, and a tradition of breaking bread together began, which endured well past the departure of children into adulthood and even beyond the deaths of my parents. In fact, when my brothers and I had the bittersweet task of clearing out my father's house, one of the final messages on his answer machine was from Sam. First came Sam's droll voice asking, "Brock, are you there? We are waiting for you to go to dinner." In the background, Yvonne's worried voice surmises, "He's not answering. We better go over." I never asked them what that day was like, but I know that each lost a best friend when respectively my mother and then my father died. And then the last piece, then there's some kind of garbage. And I think I have to sit down to get it to scroll. But luckily, this is the nice Unitarian Fellowship where perfection is not required. So the last piece is about the trip. Before this trip, when I called Sam, he started the conversation with, "Oh, Maggie, I'm so glad you called. You are the last person on my list to say goodbye to. I wanted to get to 96, but now I don't think I will. You can come by anyway if you want, but I might not be here. However, help yourself to the cherries anyway. I have a bumper crop this year." So I just wanted to say that Sam was really, I think for all of us, he was a constant presence in our life. We just had this wonderful luxury of having an uncle who was unfettered by complications of family. You know, he always let us know we were great.
I'm less articulate than my siblings and really have less to say, but I met Sam in second grade. He took Mike and I bowling at Wildcat Lanes. And you remember.
I remember Wildcat Lanes.
He took us bowling at Wildcat Lanes. And Sam had his own bowling ball in a black bag, which Mike pointed out to me had inscribed on it, "B.S. Lacey." something that Mike found, well, he was bemused by that. Here we go.
My name's Kathy Hedge, and I wanted to share that I'm a retired teacher, and in teaching they always say, well, here's all these young people, and you need to mentor them, you know, so they can be successful adults or happy adults. But I think a lot of times people forget that adults need mentors too. And this was really when I first came to the fellowship. Sam and Brock and Betty, Larry, several of the members here were people who would not accept excuses. So, you know, I wanted to say, I'm tired, I'm a full-time teacher, I'm a single mom, I have two little kids. But across their shirts, they all said, do not disappoint. And so, you know, Sam never... you know, any of those individuals have never put me down or said, you know, you're not doing enough, Kathy, but they all always let me feel that there was always something more, a little higher that you could climb. And I just think that's a very special gift to people, to make them feel that they can be more, but never feel less. So thank you, Sam.
I, of course, want to second everything that everyone said about Sam. And I can't say it too often, but could be here forever if we did that. I don't remember when I met Sam, but it was shortly after we came to Manhattan. He just was someone always there. It was wonderful. Now he's not. It's sad. I just mainly want to say that I have a daughter who's slightly disabled. And Sam always was interested in her and very helpful to her. MAPJ had a program of addressing envelopes for many years, and he was always very careful to remember that she wanted to go. It was one of the activities that she could do. And he always called her up and said, you want to go? And then he would take her if she couldn't get there herself. And, I mean, he just was a friend of hers. It was wonderful. He even came to her wedding. I mean, it was just delightful. And did I ever say thank you to him? Probably not. But I'd like to thank him now.
Oh, so many things that we said about Sam, and I wrote this whole thing, but it's way too long. But Sam was a really complicated guy, and his name Burt sounds kind of prickly, like this side of him that I knew really well. Like, that's the side of him that told me numerous times that I needed to seek psychiatric help. But we always called him Sam, and that reminds me more of his, you know, his kind, generous side. And Sam and Yvonne reached out to my family as soon as we moved here, which was almost 40 years ago, and we met them at the Unitarian Fellowship. And I really got to know him on the program committee. And so he and I had both been, you know, like chairperson and just member. And Sam was invaluable because he knew so many people, and we met so many times at his house, and he'd pass around a box of stale crackers, and we'd get right on the phone, and we'd call up all these people and whack out several months of programs. And it was really great fun, and I got to know a lot of people in the community and him just from doing that. And he probably served on every capacity in the fellowship, and from chairperson down. And he was particularly noted for his lack of fanfare in board meetings and in introducing speakers. And his lack of artifice in all affairs could be interpreted as wanting in contrast with the usual social fol-de-rol, but I always thought it was really refreshing. He just always cut right to the chase of whatever was going on. And he was also very brave when he taught religious education, which included doing things like making plaster casts of faces and even casting little icons out of lead using a homemade centrifuge. So I don't, and a torch. So, of course, a torch, if you can imagine that. He did all kinds of things with my family who would never, my kids would never have gone sailing. We went sailing with Sam. And then at least two of my daughters spent a lot of time puttering around with him in his yard and potting plants and teaching them the names of all the myriad of things growing in his yard and the names of the trees and listening to the birds. And one of my daughters, when she didn't have a job, he hired her. I hope she did a decent job cutting out sapling things, which was, I don't know, he really couldn't part with anything. And I did end up with lots of things that he foisted off on me, but my yard is also overplanted because I'm like Sam, I can't pull anything up. So most of them ended up at the fellowship. So if you're coming up the drive and you see the elderberries or you see the amaryllis blooming or you eat a persimmon, Sam, those are all from Sam. Or if you notice the flock of turkeys eating acorns down on the island by Zindel Road or wild plums, Sam planted those. And then even like the last year he was alive, he loved to pour over his plant and seed catalogs, and he bought some really like about half a dozen or more beautiful types of daylilies, and he put a couple in his yard. I took some for my yard, and some have managed to make it in the back. And also there's the beautiful tulip poplar tree on the south slope, and that was from Sam too. And there, I've only ever seen one other one in town because they're really from the hardwood forest, and maybe he remembered them from when he was growing up. He always described himself to me as a dilettante, but I thought he was really incredibly knowledgeable about any number of things. And I shared a lot of interests with him. He was a psychiatrist like my dad had been, and they had the same interest, and I just kind of felt a natural affinity with him. When he got a lot older and he was here on his own, my family always looked forward to having him over for all the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter. And he was incredibly generous with his belongings. We had his golf clubs in our garage for years, even though my husband hadn't played since he was a golf caddy and never used them. But we just couldn't bear to throw them out, and a wren made a nest inside his golf bag one year. He shared his periodicals and his books and his catalogs. And maybe in the next to the last year he was alive, he gave me his library card so I could go get books for him, and then he introduced me to the wonderful Canadian fiction writer Alice Munro, and we worked our way through all the books of hers. He had some in his library and the ones in the public library. I still have his library card if somebody wants to use it. And he, one thing we really liked was his science news magazines, which he shared with us, and we passed those on to our friends and neighbors. I'd recently been taking care of my mom for a long time, and unlike my mom, who developed Alzheimer's, Sam was always just sharp as a tack. And right to the end, he was watching the news shows and knew all about the tennis matches. And I really enjoyed spending time with him on his deck, and it was like a beautiful suspension from my life. It was like being a cloud with no cares. And we talked about the birds and just anything. He was curious about everything. And my family always felt he had a really genuine interest in each member of my family who he asked about and always remembered their names. And my grandson let my dogs come in his house and snoop around in his house and always welcomed them. But we always knew we were his fake family, and he adored you, his real family, and was so fond of you. And we talked about each of you, looked at all of your pictures. And anyway, he was a great guy, and I have wonderful memories of him. Thanks.
Well, just say briefly, all those things that he did, sailing, fishing, bird watching, hiking, he shared that with my brother and I. And he always asked about my saxophone every time I talked to him. If I could have come back and played for him one more time. Wow, I didn't expect. I was weird in a different way of him, but the thing we shared was curiosity. I never thought of him as weird because I was weird myself. And whenever I dropped out of college, I managed to find my way thanks to the support of my family. And one of the last things he ever sent to me, good Lord, he sent me a newspaper clipping. This incredibly well-educated man sent me a newspaper clipping about how the world recognizes experience. And I think he had a lot of that. And I really appreciate you all sharing and being here.
Yeah, so like my brother said, our grandpa really shared a lot of his life with us. You know, most of, he really influenced a lot of what we think of the world, how we view the world. Don't want to pigeonhole anything, really look at all the different views to get a better sense of how we should experience things. I remember when I was in college, I was really looking at going into psychiatry. So I asked him about it. I go, did you enjoy that? Is that something I should do? And he goes, absolutely not. So he goes, no, you need to do something that'll actually make money and has a future. So I didn't go into psychiatry. I went into business. And you could debate on whether or not that worked out, but through that, I appreciate his honesty. He honestly didn't think that was the best course, and I always appreciated his honesty when I asked him about anything. I wish I would have been able to see him more in the last few years of his life, but as things happen, you have your own family. I've got a wife and two children, and fortunately, I was able to introduce my first to him. And I have a wonderful picture of him with her on his lap. She's bawling. She was a little over a year old at the time. He sat there and took it. And then he handed her back, and he said, she just must be tired. And he always asked about her. He never held it against anything. So it was sad that he's gone, but we'll always have great memories.
So I'll take this opportunity and jump in for a minute. My name is Jim Bernard. I've been married to Sam's daughter, Susan, for 42 and a half years. I will represent Sam's influence on me by giving you a few facts. One is, for the last 10 years, Susan and I have been retired in a house in Keene, New York, that Sam's parents bought in 1925. And we call it the Lacey B. It's on Lacey Road. And when Susan meets a new friend in town that doesn't know me, I suddenly become Jim Lacey. the thing I'm most grateful to Sam is his strong and positive influence on our two daughters, Sarah and Anna. And my favorite story, which is relevant to Manhattan here, is Sarah and a friend of hers, probably about 15 years ago, were passing through on the way across country, and Sam took Sarah and her friend Chris to out to dinner with the weekly group that he met with of his liberal, progressive, radical friends. And Chris, after the dinner conversation, made the comment that he was really surprised to see all of this, left-leaning discussion taking place here in Kansas, Manhattan, Kansas. And Sam said, "Well, this is all of us." So I'll end it there. Leave you with that. Anyone else? Okay, I guess.
Good. One of the things we could always rely on was Sam to be there for any universal health care or any program that involved peace or justice. Sam would always be there at any protest that was protesting the Iraq War or before that, the atrocities that we were perpetrating onto Central America. He would always be there, regardless. He was on the board for, I don't know, 15 years, 20 years, something like that. And he could always be relied on for support for anything that he, I mean, whether it was renewable energy. I remember in the last, maybe the last 2 years of his life, he said, and he'd known that I was interested in renewable energy for decades, and he always supported whatever I was doing that way. He'd bring over books or bring over World Watch publications on renewable energy and things like that. But I think he was probably 96 when he said, and we'd started the solar co-op, and he said, "I'd like some panels on my house." And we said, "Well, Sam, in the payback, you may not." But it was on his bucket list, and he just knew he wanted solar panels on his house. And 2 years later, it may have been 2 years later, he said, he was probably going on to 98 at that point, and he said, "Dean and Bill, will you put two more panels on my house?" And so this was, you could always rely on him to be there for whatever it was that you were doing. It was great. His influence is going to be greatly missed.
A bit more from the Tennyson poem, Ulysses. "There lies the port. The vessel puffs her sail. There gloom the dark broad seas. My mariners, souls that have toiled and wrought and thought with me. You and I are old. Old age hath yet his honor and his toil. Death closes all. But something ere the end, some work of noble note may yet be done, not unbecoming men that strove with gods. The lights begin to twinkle from the rocks, the long day wanes, the slow moon climbs, the deep moans round with many voices. Come, my friends, 'tis not too late to seek a newer world. Push off and, sitting well in order, smite the sounding furrows, for my purpose holds to sail beyond the sunset and the baths of all the western stars until I die. It may be that the gulfs will wash us down. It may be that we shall touch the happy isles and see the great Achilles whom we knew. Though much is taken, much abides, and though we are not now that strength which in old days moved heaven and earth, that which we are one equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield." Sam sailed his dark broad seas beyond the sunset and lived to old age. What he was, always strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. And now, if there be any words unsaid, debts unsettled, or forgiveness withheld, may we find a way to peace with Sam, though his physical body is gone. Our celebration of Sam's life does not end here. It will go on in our minds, our hearts, and on our lips. We are linked to him with the fine human ties that grow between those who are known to each other and who care about each other over a period of time. So, Sam, we've said our goodbyes. You've moved from death to life, from known to unknown. We're glad we knew you. And as we remember you, we will strive to live into our own best selves, knowing that in time your destiny is our own. In the meantime, we will treasure the gifts you have given and all the gifts of our lives. Our celebration and sharing of memory continues with a reception in the Alsop room down the hallway to the left after you exit the sanctuary. Please greet the family there. Go now and be blessed. Thank you.